podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics Podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 58 and we're honing in on an exciting end to the Women's Super League this week. My name is Ryan Bailey and joining me is my good friend Mark Carey. Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Ryan Bailey. It's a big week in the world of Ryan Bailey, is it not?
It's a really big week, and it's a week that I've been dreading for some time, actually.
For 30 years, we might
say. For 30 years, because, I've been dreading this year.
Because, Ryan, for the listeners, Ryan Bailey turns 30 years of age on Thursday,
yes.
The 12th of May, for all those listeners who want to send him a lovely message, either... either at Fanalytics Pod or at Ryan Bailey 57 if they want to.
Yeah,
tweet
I mean, I'm too old to use Twitter now. I'm not even sure anymore, to be honest. That looks also be embarrassing when no one sends me a message. So cheers for teeing that up. For anyone who does know me, I've been freaking out about getting old for a very long time. I remember a long time ago, at the age of 23, I freaked out about turning 23. So you can imagine how I'm feeling with a couple of days left in my 20s. Mainly because, actually, I don't know about you, whenever I used to play, you know, Football Manager, FIFA, etc., etc., and I used to do career mode, I adopted a policy a couple of times of never buying a player over 30, which, now I'm there. That at that time, you know, used to seem like a real ripe old age, didn't it? And here we are, well and truly past my peak.
Arguably past your peak, and this is what I'll maybe come on to, but there's a lot of players now who are born beyond the year 2000, which it just still doesn't get old. And I mean,
it's no longer a shock, is it? That used to be a shock when it was like so and so was born in 2001 or something.
Yeah, but now that Whereas now it's 20 year olds, right? Like, that's actually not even that young for a professional footballer anymore.
So, exactly that, yeah.
I mean, we've done about being past your peak or not. What is the peak age for a footballer? We've done that in previous episodes. But there's certain players, Ryan, who age like a fine wine.
Yes.
And I was going to get your thoughts as to who they might be. I mean, this season especially, I'm thinking Robert Lewandowski. I'm thinking Karim Benzema, who is having his best season of his career, goal-scoring-wise. And that's at the domestic level. And we don't even need to mention just how much he's having it at the Champions League and the European level. So plenty of players who are aging like a fine wine and not necessarily past their peak, Ryan.
Lewandowski seems like he's been over 30 for a very long time. Like, I don't ever remember thinking Lewandowski is a young up-and-coming player. Do you know what I mean? He's just always sort of existed. Benzema, less so maybe. But bet you're right, Benzema is definitely having a season and a half, isn't he? But he's always been good. He's just always been a little bit overshadowed, hasn't he?
Overshadowed by a certain Cristiano Ronaldo, also another player.
He was definitely well over 30,
Well over 30 and still scoring for fun. You know, all things aside, you know, don't want to talk about his all-round game, the controversy surrounding that, but he's still scoring a lot. So I think there's plenty more years in you, Ryan. I mean, at the moment, physically, you're in a better shape than I am. I'm only on one leg still, so
I'm not sure you can count being crocked as being in bad physical condition. But yeah, fair enough. I'll take that. It's interesting actually, because actually that I was trying to just think then who these players over 30 who I'd say would. Modric came to mind.
Also,
but that whole Real Madrid midfield is actually well over 30, isn't it? Which actually, this is completely off topic. Well, it's not really, but it when I was watching, you know, last week when Real Madrid came back in the 90 whatever it was minute and scored two goals against Man City in the Champions League. For anyone who didn't watch that game,
where were you?
I don't think there was anyone who didn't watch that game. It was one of the greatest 5 minutes I've ever seen of football. But I was going to ask you what your opinion on this was, because there's a lot of chat going round about, this is always a phrase I've taken issue with, sort of experience or pedigree in a certain competition. And you know, like Real Madrid are experienced in the Champions League, etc., etc., but by the end of it, loads of those players within the lineup weren't even like, I think Modric had gone off and a few others had as well. What's your opinion on being experienced in a certain competition? You get that all the time with teams like Real Madrid, don't you? And then PSG are not experienced in the Champions League, blah, blah, Man City are not experienced in the Champions League. Depending on who's in their team or what form they're in, etc., there's always some sort of pundit goes, well, you know, they've got pedigree in this competition. I've always just wondered what you thought about that, because I always thought that was absolute nonsense. But then the fact that Real Madrid came back and did that, I was like, oh, well, maybe it is true then. Who knows? They just refused to be, you know, beaten.
Yeah, I don't know how much it's a part of the kind of, and I don't want to use another sort of easy term of like the club's DNA and things like that, because as you say, the actual players on the pitch compared to those who'd won in recent years, going back to sort of 2016, 17, 18, where they won it 3 years on the bounce, there's a selection of players who also won it back then. But as you say, they weren't on the pitch when the comeback came. So, there's all the other narratives, isn't it, of just, this club expects to be in finals and things like that.
Exactly,
but then the actual individual personnel who's kicking the football on the pitch aren't the same as those who were still winning it maybe in decades or years gone by. So there must
be... You're so right. It's that phrase, they know how to win. They know how to get through the Champions League. They know how to win semi-finals, blah, blah, blah. I just always find that a bit rubbish, to be honest. But
I do agree when you actually think about, especially given our podcast, we're talking about the technical side of it, the analysis side of it. It's a bit of an easy narrative. I understand the fans' expectations to be in finals and to win leagues and titles and stuff, because they've been acclimatised to that if you're a Real Madrid or a Manchester United, etc. Yeah. But, what I would say about the PSG thing, I understand that, where not necessarily as a club they have a mental block, but in recent years the likes of Neymar and Mbappe and a lot of the squad who have tried and failed to get over the line in recent years, there must be something there. But that is because they are the same players over a number of years. But to kind of work back up to a decade ago and say that this club just knows how to win, it is different players. But then they are then elite players who play for the likes of Real Madrid, so they will be able to find a way. I don't know is the short answer. It's a bit of an unquantifiable, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, which we don't deal in those on the Football Fantasy Podcast, do we? So we only go for hard, cold facts,
correct,
as has been said in the past.
And my hard, cold fact, Ryan, is that you turn 30 years of age. That's a number.
That's such a hard, cold fact.
Thursday.
Oh, dear. Good grief. Well, wish me well, everyone, because I won't remember how to press record on a podcast after Thursday. It's all going to be downhill from here. So it's been fun while it lasted. But anyway, should we get on with the final episode that I'll record in my 20s?
Let's get on with that, man.
Okay, Mark, in this episode, we are going to discuss a really exciting end, actually, to the Women's Super League. Now, for those of our listeners who follow the Women's Super League, you will know that it was a very exciting culmination on the last day, a two-horse race that Chelsea went into with the advantage. They just needed to win, didn't they? And then Arsenal also could have won, but then they were points ahead, right?
Yeah, there was a time when Arsenal were on to win it, basically. But it was a formality in the end, Chelsea beating Manchester United 4-2, and they won the league. 56 points, Arsenal on 55, so they beat them by 1 point. And any league that finishes on the final day, where obviously it is between first and second, you just love those ones where you are kind of panning between the two grounds. It swings from one to the other, and then obviously there's the eventual victors. I just love a final day title decider.
Am I right in thinking and saying that Chelsea have won 5 out of the last 6 Women's Super League titles?
Yeah, and this is their third in a row. And if I'm not too mistaken, because I think it stopped obviously for COVID, that this is the first title of those three that they'll actually be able to celebrate with the fans on as well.
That's amazing.
Obviously did celebrate with the fans on. So it's been a long time coming to be able to do that. And I actually helped Michael Cox of The Athletic with a piece on Chelsea women about how the season kind of went. And rather than the expectation being nowadays in the modern kind of Twitter world as well, is that everything has to be fantastic and there's superlatives and there's hyperbole. And, you know, when you win a league, you have to win basically every game in the men's and the women's league. And Chelsea have sort of ground this one out this season. They weren't too kind of remarkable. They didn't steamroller everyone. They ground out quite a lot of
They had injury issues, didn't they, this season?
Yes, exactly. They've had sort of disruptions and they just found a way, basically, to get over the line. Really solid defensively, ultimately. Ultimately won it. And as I say, it was the third title in a row for Chelsea. So, as they said, London is blue and England is blue.
London is blue. I... I don't know about you, I am a massive fan of Emma Hayes, the manager.
100%.
Just everything she says just makes me sort of smile because of the way she says everything. But also, she's just so insightful and clearly just an amazing coach in terms of what she's achieved with this Chelsea team. And it's actually no mean feat, is it, to win 5 out of 6? That's pretty impressive. That's big numbers.
Yeah, and to get to the Champions League final last season as well. To do it on multiple fronts. They did eventually fall short against Barça Femení, who we will come on to, I'm sure, very shortly. They are just a class above. But fantastic. And I think I saw something on Twitter only today about how she's doing this and she's got, you know, a young child as well. It's so empowering for her to be an example to other people as a mother who is operating at the highest level in the women's game. A fantastic example to everyone else.
Do you know what? So we've wanted to talk about the Women's Super League for a little while, and we've always mentioned women's football a lot, but it's something that I think is increasingly becoming more popular and certainly more accessible mainstream-wise to people who didn't necessarily follow women's football in the last few years. I know for a start, I know that whenever I scroll down my Twitter feed at the moment, I see so much women's football content, which is brilliant. There's so much more to read, especially from your colleagues at The Athletic, which we'll come on to very shortly. I've been to a couple of Arsenal women's games now because I actually live relatively close to Meadow Park Stadium, which is where Arsenal women's play. And also, I have to say, when I've been to the games, I've said in the past, haven't I, that my unpopular football opinion is that I'm much rather watching football at home in the pub or on the TV because I'm not a massive fan of the atmosphere. I actually love going and watching Arsenal women's team. The atmosphere is so nice, so friendly and supportive. And it's also just amazing I think the charm of it as well is that you can be so close to the game. It's absolutely phenomenal. Like I was stood in the stands, but on a low level behind the goal when Beth Mead scored an absolute rocket from range, and I literally saw it swerve top corner right in front of my face. And just the whole experience is just amazing. But the support, I don't know what the support for women's football was like 5 years ago necessarily in the stands. I can't claim to have gone to games and know. Not from a lack of wanting to, but maybe from a lack of exposure and how the game's growing. But it'd be really interesting to know how much the popularity has grown in recent years, because obviously the 2019 Women's World Cup was massive, wasn't it, in terms of growing popularity for the game. But the appetite was fantastic and the atmosphere, I loved it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I do think there was, especially in this country, a moment in that 2019 World Cup. But I think that it's about exposure and about coverage, and the Sky Sports coverage as well that's been for WSL has been brilliant. I've enjoyed watching that as well. Karen Carney's obviously a fantastic pundit. It'd be really good to get her on, I think, if we could try and get
her on. It would be very good
podcast.
To get. If you're listening, Karen, we'd love to have you on the podcast.
Of course she's listening, Ryan. I do think the coverage of that has been exceptional as well, which is only going to obviously then improve. And if you can give as much dedication and time to that, then it's only going to improve the appetite for it. And you went to Meadow Park, as you say. That was for the Aston Villa game, was it?
It was, when they thumped them 7-0.
7-0. And we went to I think we posted it on our socials as well. We went to the Arsenal-Barcelona game in the Champions League, which
we did, yeah.
We can come back to. But I think, is Arsenal your team then?
I never ever would have said I support Arsenal men's team because, as we know, I grew up as a guilty Man United fan in the time of Roy Keane, Vieira, etc. So Arsenal back then, no chance. But I've got to say, I'm a little bit of a guilty Arsenal women's fan because they're now my local team. So I'm thinking that that's where I'll go watch my football from now on, to be honest.
And so local that didn't you see them out walking sometime? What was this story again?
I did. Oh, it was brilliant. I've just moved house, as you know, so in my new local town, I went to go pick up a dessert from a bakery that we were taking to a friend's house. And I quickly swung in. I parked just outside this shop and I saw these massive cars, you know, like really nice cars outside. And I'm thinking, hello, who's come to get their pudding from here today? And literally, as I walked into this bakery, it was about 7 of the Arsenal women's team walked out, including Beth Mead, Vivian Miedema,
Your favourite player.
Vivian Media is my favourite player. And they all walked out. And I was so starstruck. It was ridiculous. But to the point where I think I was just in the doorway of the bakery, like, staring. And they must have been like, who is this creepy guy who's not moving out the way while we're trying to come out of the thing? But I absolutely bottled it in terms of, well, I never want to be that person who goes, can I have a picture, please? Yeah. But I kind of wanted to prove that I'd just seen seven of the Arsenal women's team in a bakery. So again, for all the Arsenal women's players who are listening, that apologies for standing in the way. But yeah, it was a pretty cool moment. I'm not sure anyone believed me when I actually told them, but it was true.
Yeah, you always kind of need proof. But no, again, they're massive examples to everyone. And I think it's always good to have those role models. These players that you're talking about, Jordan Nobbs, Beth Mead, Viv Miedema, are household names now, you know, which I think is a real good thing. They've got, you know, they're such role models, as I say. So plenty to unpick, I think.
Well, absolutely. And it's quite handy now, Mark, that you work for The Athletic, because it means that we are able to ask some of your colleagues who know way more about certain things than we do to come onto the podcast and talk about it. So we have actually asked Charlotte Harper to come on to the Football Fanalytics podcast, who's a colleague of yours.
She is, yes. Charlotte Harper is one of our women's football writers at The Athletic. She's also a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live, for the WSL. Our second 5 Live commentator on the podcast, Ryan, after John Murray, of course. And Charlotte's great. The pieces that she writes are fantastic, and she's got so much insight. So we thought it'd be a good idea to pick her brains on everything that happened in the weekend just gone, the drama that unfolded, and a bit of a broader conversation about women's football.
Let's do it. Well, we are delighted to welcome Charlotte Harper onto the podcast. Charlotte, thank you for coming on the Football Fanalytics podcast. I would introduce you to Mark, but you actually know Mark, so that's kind of a bit pointless. How are you doing there? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you. Really excited to be on the pod, and very lucky to work with Mark as well.
Very lucky to work. Everyone's just lucky to work with Mark.
She's a very good liar, is Charlotte.
Oh, there you go. Charlotte, we're going to start right at the end, really. I mean, it was obviously the culmination of the Women's Super League this weekend. Chelsea lifted the title on the final day. I believe you were there. What was it like?
I was. And it was a bit of a blur, to be honest. One of the best games I've ever seen. Chelsea 2-1 down at half time. Like, you just haven't heard that in the WSL this season, and there was a real bite to it, a real edge. The WSL is normally celebrated with the family atmosphere and targeting a different kind of audience, which is great. You don't get that kind of animosity or hostility in a crowd so much as the men's football, and it wasn't hostile at Chelsea in terms of discomfort, but there were definitely Chelsea fans putting Manchester United in an uncomfortable area in terms of booing, throw-ins if they were time-wasting and things like that, which just created another sense of occasion for the last day of the season.
That's really interesting, actually, because I actually just said to Mark previously, I went to watch Arsenal versus Aston Villa a couple of weeks ago, at the 7-0 game where they won, and the atmosphere was just so friendly and lovely. But obviously that game, kind of when they were 4-0 up, didn't have too much riding on it. But is that kind of good to see? Like, did you kind of like that it was a bit more like that? Was that a good thing for that final game?
Yeah, definitely. It adds to the drama, and you can see the players feed off it as well. Guro Wrighton, when she scored to put Chelsea ahead 3-2 for the first time in the game, she like roared, and you don't normally see that passionate aggression, I want to say. And she went really up close and personal to the fans. And I think that's the first time we've seen that emotion and that drive from the players. And, you know, King's Meadow just erupted when that goal went in.
Amazing. I think as well, if you were to see that, just look at the results by the end of the game, it would have looked maybe kind of comfortable. But there was a time when Arsenal were ahead. They were going to win the title, as you say, at half time, I think. Or certainly during that first half, Arsenal were on to win the title. But do you think, I mean, I said to Ryan before, I did a piece with Michael Cox, which contributed towards showing that Chelsea kind of dug this one out a little bit this season. It wasn't all kind of a walkover. They ground quite a few results out. Do you think ultimately, I know they only beat Arsenal by 1 point, do you think it was, you know, they were deserving winners ultimately by the end of the season?
Yeah, I think so. As you said, they ground results out and they learned to win ugly. They didn't. Emma Hayes said they learned how to. You don't have to pass the ball into the net and score a perfect goal. You know, 1-0 wins against Aston Villa and Birmingham. They really went to the edge there, but they struggled with injuries as well. Huge injuries to Magdalena Eriksson, their captain, Pernilla Harder, Sam Kerr and G were absent with the Asian Cup. Melanie Leupolz is pregnant, and yet they still managed to win. So deserved winners, and that consistency definitely, and individuals who became a collective and, you know, a sum of their parts, really.
I've got to say as well, Charlotte did a fantastic piece which summarised all of this, which we can put in the a link in the bio for this episode. Everything that you just said, perfectly written in a piece out this morning, I believe, at the time of recording.
And in terms of, so am I right thinking that Chelsea have won 5 out of the last 6 now, Charlotte? Is that right? Titles?
Yeah, 5 out of the last 6 titles.
Is this the most to the wire one that's happened then in recent seasons, or has this been the sort of closest they've been run competitively to someone else pipping them in those 5 wins, if you see what I mean?
I've got to be honest, I can't quite remember all kind of 5 off the top of my head. Definitely the last 3, this is the closest it's been in terms of goal difference, because, you know, at half time Arsenal were winning on goal difference. And would have lifted the trophy had the scores stayed the same. And Arsenal were leading for a large majority of the season. So it was, you know, the fact that it went down to the last day shows how tight it was. I think from my perspective, going in, I always backed Chelsea on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
Just because it was in their hands. They knew they had one job to do, and they did it.
Yeah, and a fantastic win, ultimately. And I want to kind of broaden it out to wider Europe now, Charlotte, because you've been to some historic games recently. You've been to the Nou Camp and the Parc de France for some record attendances, really. I wanted you to sort of share, again, you've done some fantastic pieces on The Athletic about it, but just tell us a little bit about, I guess, your experience. I know from speaking to you that there was a slightly different atmosphere between those two stadiums in itself.
Definitely. Barcelona, it was more kind of a carnival, like a festival. And again, that was a hostile crowd against Real Madrid, but it was a celebration. Those, you know, 91,500 plus people.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, I was walking with a colleague down towards the stadium, and you could hear the chants, but they weren't guttural chants of male fans. It was a mix of men and women, and the first time I've heard that before. And I looked at my colleague. I was like, "I'm so excited!" It was just that buzz, and it was one of the highlights of my life. I think the piercing noise of the whistles against the Real Madrid players. And we were in the press box, and the Barcelona communications team were delaying the announcement of attendance because they wanted to wait until they had everybody in the stadium. So I think it got announced in 80-something minute. And wow. The communication press team thumped her hand on the table, and I thought, well, they've either just missed it or just got it. And right. The relief for them as well. There were tears in the press box, I think, because it was a message to say, we've put on a show and people have come to see it.
Wow. Amazing. I mean, I saw your video from that article where you just sort of did a bit of a pan around the stadium, and it was like raucous. It was amazing. Like, how many did you say it was? 90-odd thousand?
I should know this off the top of my head. The first attendance, I think, was 91,000.
Wow.
558, and then they broke it again when they played Wolfsburg in the semi-final.
Wow. And so then how did that then differ from the Parc de France recently? PSG obviously losing to Lyon. Lyon now in the final against Barcelona. How did that differ?
It was a lot more a kind of acerbic in terms of the PSG. The ultras were banging their drums and didn't stop. There were firecrackers, there was smoke, and they really created that atmosphere for PSG. Of course, it was 43,300 and something, which was, you know, half of Barcelona. So the feel was not as big. But having said that, they still packed out the stadium, and it's a record for a domestic women's game in France.
Wow.
And, you know, PSG have done it really well because Barcelona normally play at the Johan Cruyff Stadium, which is only a capacity of 5,000. So after that world record on the Wednesday, they then went and played a league match on the Saturday, and 3,999 people came and turned up to that league match. Wow. Compared to the 91,000. Whereas the Parc de Princes, they built it kind of gradually and organically. So, you know, those attendances, they're not one off.
Yeah.
There'll be more of those to come.
Wow. And I was going to ask a question, Charlotte. So, like, you know, my following of women's football in recent years, I think, to be honest, like a lot of people, since the 2019 World Cup, I all of a sudden, not from a lack of interest, but from just being having exposure to it and seeing more, and all of a sudden wanted to follow. Are the European leagues in women's football further ahead than we are back here in terms of, because those numbers of attendances you're saying, like, that's absolutely huge, isn't it? Do you get that in the WSL games anywhere near at the moment? Because obviously, as I said, I've only ever been to Arsenal games before. I haven't been to a Chelsea women's game. But what kind of numbers are we looking at here?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think what we've got to point out is those are Champions League games.
Right.
And people love something when it's at stake. And as you said, there's something riding on it. And we didn't have any other teams in the Champions League at those stages. The WSL attendance record, I believe, was from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium before COVID. I can't remember exact figure, around high 30,000s. But, you know, attendances are still an issue in the WSL. You're thinking, okay, we've got to maintain a fan base that turns up every week. But I also think part of a reason for going to the Nou Camp is the occasion. Mm. Like, tickets were cheap. It's a lot less hassle compared to a men's game in terms of buying tickets in advance and the price, and you were able to bring your family, and there were young, you know, children of 3-year-olds and plus, from right the way up to grandmothers. So the accessibility there at the Nou Camp and having that chance to go to such a historic occasion, it will be interesting, you know, if Chelsea were to play at Stamford Bridge, how many they would pull in as well. I know Arsenal have played at the Emirates recently in the North London Derby, but attendances haven't been as big as expected, I would say.
I mean, it helps as well that Barca Femini are, especially this season, one of the best teams going. I looked at the table, obviously they're top of the league in their domestic league, and it's 29 games played, 29 wins. Their goals scored is 157 and 10 conceded. So they are absolutely on fire. We obviously saw them earlier in the season, didn't we, Ryan, against Arsenal at the Emirates, and they absolutely walked all over Arsenal. They were so, so good. Of course, in the Champions League final against Lyon, who are the... Well, it's almost like Barcelona are the new kids on the block. Lyon have been round the block a few times in terms of their European pedigree. And it's something, again, you wrote about, Charlotte, wasn't it? That Lyon, they're back, but were they ever really away? You know, Barcelona against Lyon in the final, who do you tip to win? Can you tip anyone to win?
Well, wow, you're the first person who's asked me that, actually. And I'm going to cop out. I need to give it some more thought, but yeah. I might regret this. I can't call it. Like, as you said, Barcelona are the new kids on the block. So there's been a huge amount of noise surrounding them. But also, they play electric football. Mm-hmm. It's exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. Lyon, I think you can understand if they felt a little bit aggrieved of how much attention Barcelona have gotten. And it's like, hello,
yeah,
we've won 7 of those Champions League. You've won 1.
Yeah.
Just, you know, pipe down a little bit.
Back in your box.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Lyon were reigning supreme for so long. They won 5 consecutive Champions Leagues up until last year. So It really is that kind of chic, snappy, trendy, and that's not to diminish Barcelona's football at all, but the ones grabbing the headlines compared to the juggernauts of Lyon, who, grind victories out, and even against Paris Saint-Germain, there were still gaps in their play. But having said that, Barcelona then lost to Wolfsburg on their return leg 2-0, which was really surprising, having beat them 5-1 at the Nou Camp and then losing 2-0. And I think mentally they just switched off of like, we're through, weren't really at the races. So I can't call it at this stage, which is, it is a cop out, but.
No, I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. And I did absolutely put you on the spot. So without putting you on the spot any further, before I want to give maybe a comment about the data side of things in women's football, we've obviously got the exciting Women's Euros coming up in the summer. And I think this is going to be another opportunity to, I guess, broaden the exposure of women's football internationally. How exciting do you think that would be for the exposure broadly and internationally?
It's really exciting. I just hope that people turn up and support it all the way. I think you can get quite into a bubble of, the Euros is happening and we know it's happening because it's our jobs. But it's got to appeal to a wider audience, and not the appeal, it's got to be marketed in the right places. So in those host cities, in Rotherham, in Sheffield, in Southampton, people have got to know about it, the locals. And those buying tickets as well, it's got to be a kind of a synergy all as one. I know that the organising tournament have put on the roadshow for UEFA Euros that is taking place in each host city. They've also combined with the local arts councils as well, so they're doing a lot around that to drum up the support. It's going to be a fantastic occasion to put the best talent on the biggest stage. And I think, come the knockout stages, people are going to sit up and think, wow, these players are damn good.
100%. Next thing, Mark's going to ask you who you tip to win that as well. You know, he's
No,
going to just stick you on the spot.
I'm not that harsh. I don't make the same mistake twice. But do you have one? It sounds like you have one.
Again, it's a very open race. I think France are looking really, really strong in terms of the quality that they have. Just depends how they come together on the pitch. Spain have a core from Barcelona who know each other inside out. Again, different coach, different playing style, but they were the bookies' favourites. I think that's quite optimistic considering that they lack experience in major tournaments. Sweden are really the ones to look out for. They released their shirt, and on the inside collar of their shirt, their match analyst wrote a guide of how to stop
I
Sweden.
saw this.
And I, if that's not audacious enough, I don't know
On
what
the
is. It's
inside of
like,
the collar.
on the inside of the collar, it's like, this is how you stop Sweden. And they've written it. Everyone can read it. You can read the match analyst's report of a step-by-step guide of how to beat us because we're that good.
Oh my God, I love that.
It's honestly, it's fantastic. And it does bring me perfectly. What a brilliant segue that was as well. Because there's, honestly, Ryan, there's pass maps, there's all sorts. I'll send it to you and I'll put a
On the
link in the
inside of the
bio.
shirt, how
No,
big are these
this is in the
pass
document.
maps?
This is in the
Oh, right,
document.
okay. I thought you meant they've got like pass maps printed on the inside or something.
There's a brilliant link, which I'll send to you, Ryan. I'll put a link in the bio as well. But again, it takes me to the point of a real opportunity for obviously wider exposure internationally and for everyone to get, behind it. And I think for us speaking as the Athletic, it's a really big opportunity for us to add, the data side of it. And it's something Charlotte and I have spoken about. And it brought me to the wider point of how much data and analytics is used within the women's game. And there was something done, I think going back a year ago now, by our colleague Katie Wyatt, and basically looked to see how many WSL clubs are sort of using data. And there's a company we've spoken about before, I think, Ryan, Analytics FC, who have basically working with multiple clubs in the WSL as part of their recruitment strategy. So the more data collection that's obviously that occurs across multiple leagues, the stronger this recruitment strategy can be. And there are other companies who look at this, more as StatsBomb, again, a company we've spoken about, Ryan. They've released free data in the past from the WSL. I know that another company, Metrica Sports, are working more and more with women's teams
Nice.
and as I say, Analytics FC as well. So there's a number of companies who have got more dedicated work for the women's game, which was great to see. I think there's still, I don't know what you think, Charlotte, from a media perspective, I still think there's a real opportunity to increase the work that we sort of do already, maybe on site, that I don't think many other media platforms are really doing at all. Just simple things like shot maps and pass maps and some simple numbers. I don't know whether I've really seen it elsewhere in the women's game.
No, I think there is a huge potential for that. And, you know, we as analysts and data, whether it's men or women, we love kind of digging deep into that. So a lot of the articles that I've written about have been kind of topical, whether that be sports washing or crowd attendances or referees. But, you know, we also want to write about the football and get into the nitty gritty of the data that's available to us. And we do have it. We need to use it. But on the flip side, we have this pool that we can use. But also Mark and I were talking and saying, OK, well, we can do a really kind of basic squad profile of ages and appearances across the international scale. And I said to Mark, yep, just watch out because the data is not necessarily available to us or not necessarily accurate enough for every player or every squad. And in real basics, like, for example, players don't have wiki pages. Mm. Like, you can't necessarily just scrape wiki and say, yep, they're that age and they've got that number of appearances, because it's either not there or not accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the key issue, and that's something we absolutely need to improve upon. And that's the same, obviously, from a data perspective. If you have garbage going in, you have garbage coming out. If we don't have accurate data, what's the point in reporting on it in the first place? So absolutely true. I am conscious of your time, Charlotte. We have taken you for quite long enough. But I think it's been fantastic, Ryan. Do you agree? I think just to get an insight from a professional like Charlotte, just to speak about all manner of topics.
Stop it, Mark.
You enjoyed it as much as I have, Ryan. See, I can return the favour.
Absolutely. Charlotte, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us on the Football Fanalytics podcast. It's been great having you.
No worries. I loved being on here, and hopefully in a couple of months' time we'll have a review of where data is at and what the Euros brought us in terms of the data picture in women's football. Yes.
100%. Nice one, Charlotte. Thank you. Well, Mark, I have now had the pleasure of speaking to two people from The Athletic. So in subsequent episodes to come, hopefully that number continues to grow. But I really enjoyed talking to Charlotte. That was a really good chat.
Yeah, really fun. It's always, as you say, it's always good to be able to call in a favour with a friend and a colleague. And great insight as well from Charlotte. I'll link her main profile from The Athletic in the bio so that everyone can read it. But there's some specific articles that we reference, which I'll specifically include as well, because she's written up some brilliant stuff recently, and she's been part of some real historic moments as well. As I say, the Nou Camp, over 91,000 fans in attendance.
That is unbelievable, isn't it, when you think about it? 91,000 is a lot of people.
It's brilliant. I remember she wrote a fantastic piece about that as well. So again, an indication of those bigger games, which Charlotte explained really eloquently, that those bigger games, when there's more opportunity for more fans to come, they are. And we've obviously got the Euros to come, where there'll be even more of that as well. So really exciting times to come.
Well, Mark, therein lies my time as a 20-something-year-old male talking about football on the Football Fanalytics podcast. It's been a pleasure. To the listeners, I may well be a changed person when I come back. You never know. I might have actually matured slightly.
Deeper voice.
Unlikely, but I can try. There might be a bit more sort of measured tactic to my talking game. I might revert to a different position. You just don't know, do you? I might settle.
Are you going to use phrases like "back in my day"?
Back in my day,
in the old days, and then in the men's game, are you going to call it the Premiership and not the Premier League? Because you've just forgotten that it's changed.
Yeah, I'm just going to start sounding really out of date, and I'm going to sound like Graham Souness in lots of ways. I think from now on, Dino Souness, Dino Ryan. Who knows? we'll see, won't we? Who knows what's going to happen on the other side? I might be a complete changed person. But anyway, it's been good fun. And we really enjoyed that episode. So, listeners, if you enjoyed that episode, please let us know. Let us know your thoughts on the WSL season. You can get in touch with us, and you know where to do that. We are on social media, at FanalyticsPod. We also have an email address. We are fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Please do get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts on the episode, and any questions, of course, that you would like us to look into in the coming episodes. Mark, it's been a pleasure. I shall see you next time, and have a great week, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.